And as Dean said, I'm Lyndall, and I'd like to welcome all of you this morning. It's great to see everybody here. And I will be giving the talk this week, continuing our exploration of this first of the ox herding pictures, Searching for the Ox. And so we're going to start the talk today the same way we have earlier this month, and I'll ask Dean to do the honors here to share the picture on the screen so you have a little time to reflect on it. So taking just a few moments to look at the picture here. Noticing anything that stands out for you. Being aware of any thoughts, feelings, memories that might come up as you look at the picture. And then doing the same with the poem as I read it. Just noticing anything it brings up for you. In the pasture of the world, I endlessly push aside the tall grasses in search of the bull, following unnamed rivers, lost upon the interpenetrating paths of distant mountains, my strength failing and my vitality exhausted. I cannot find the bull. I only hear the locusts chirping through the forests at night. Taking those words in, reconnecting. So that gives us a little bit of a chance to kind of reconnect with this first picture that we're looking at. And I wanted to start out just by saying how much I've appreciated the talks we've had by Lauren and Arv already this month, and they've really helped me to appreciate with these ox herding pictures how they give you a sense of what it feels like to be on the path, of the experiences we go through on the path. So it's just really a kind of a teaching that we experience in a holistic way. And just as our experience of practice is multifaceted, so is our experience of these pictures. And it's good to remember that they don't suggest just one thing. Multiple thoughts can come up when we look at the pictures. And while we have common experiences, we'll each experience them in our own way and experience the path in our own way, or maybe in several ways. And over the past weeks, both Arv and also Tim Guile, who is one of our guiding teachers in Tim's Monday night talks, they framed this first ox herding picture as an illustration of the experience of dukkha or suffering. And so in the picture, and I think maybe even more in the words of the poem, we feel that pain of searching and searching in all the wrong places for what we think will bring us happiness. As the poem says, in the pasture of the world, I endlessly push aside the tall grasses, my strength failing, my vitality exhausted. You know, you get this feeling we're looking and we really don't find any real relief. And so those words really put us in touch with the pain that we feel when we're looking for lasting happiness in places where it just can't be found, in things that can only provide what we're seeking only just for so long because they're impermanent and they don't last. And I think that this is a really accurate and really helpful way to see this first ox herding picture. Thinking about it in that way helps us to remember that it's dukkha that often got us started on this path in the first place, just feeling that dissatisfaction and exhaustion with the way that we were doing things in our life, that things weren't working. But this way of looking also emphasizes how important the ongoing investigation of dukkha is. Because when we hear the poem and look at the picture, we recognize how even if we've been practicing a long time, we still come back to this place. We get caught in our cravings. We get caught in our aversion. We get caught in looking for happiness where it can't really be found. We still feel frustrated and dissatisfied, exhausted, searching for something. You know, it doesn't just stop the first time we notice it. It's an ongoing thing. And that's the way it should be. It needs to be an ongoing thing. Because as we keep coming back and coming back, we really understand this experience of dukkha more and more on the deepest level. And because both Arv and Tim gave such great talks on this subject, I have to admit that after listening to them, I kind of found myself wondering what more I could add to what's already been said about this first picture of the search for the ox. But then as I continued to reflect on the poem and look at the picture, and I think, you know, at this time, especially to look at that picture, I started to notice another aspect of it that might be worth discussing. And what I noticed is really pretty obvious, but, you know, it kind of came out strongly. And it's just that sense of the search itself. The way this picture brings up the feeling of embarking on a journey and stepping out into the unknown. And I think a couple of people brought this up last week. You know, the way that in this picture, the searcher is already on a kind of a path, even if he isn't really sure what it is or where it's going. And when I look at him, you know, I can see like someone that feels like what they're doing right now isn't quite right, who's beginning to search for something different. And in that sense, there's a feeling of adventure in this picture and of possibility for new things. But at the same time, it's pretty clear that even if the ox herder is on kind of a path, he's pretty hesitant about this whole thing. And yes, he's going forth, but he's really pretty clueless about what he's going forth into. You know, he just does not know what's going on. And so naturally, this sense of moving into the unknown, you can see in the way he looks, it really brings this feeling of being lost and confused, not knowing what you're looking for, not knowing what might happen. You see him, like several people have mentioned, it's there in his posture. It's there in his expression. He's walking forward, but he's looking behind with this worried expression on his face. You know, maybe like he's not sure what scary thing might be following him or might pop out from the bushes. Or maybe he's feeling like he ought to just turn around and head back the way he came. So you can just see a lot of hesitancy and a lot of fear. So, you know, somebody who's moving into unknown territory. So, well, on the one hand, there's adventure and possibility moving into the unknown. This place of beginning an unknown journey is also a place of dukkha. And it's, you know, not so much the dukkha that comes from endlessly searching for satisfaction in all the wrong places, this dukkha of craving. It's a little bit different flavor of dukkha, more the dukkha of doubt and confusion and fear of the unknown. And just as we're all quite familiar with this dukkha of craving and wanting something that we can't seem to find, I think we're probably all pretty familiar with this dukkha of doubt and confusion too. And I think a lot of us will remember some of this feeling when, from the time we first started to look for a path or a practice that worked for us. You know, that feeling we knew something wasn't quite right with our lines. We knew that something was missing, but we weren't sure what. And so we started searching and trying to find the answer. And I remember this time when I was in that phase, you know, trying all these different things. I tried going back to church, you know, my original belief that I was brought up in, and that didn't really feel quite right. It brought up all the issues that made me leave in the first place. And, you know, I tried looking into yoga. I went to lectures at the Theosophical Society. I read a lot of books about goddess spirituality and Buddhism and Hinduism and just all kinds of different things. And lots of searching and experimenting, and you may have gone through a lot of that too. And on the one hand, there was a kind of adventure and exhilaration with this exploration, but there was also a lot of a uneasy feeling for me too. You know, I wasn't even quite sure why I was doing these things half the time. It felt a little strange. Sometimes it didn't feel quite right. It wasn't really comfortable. And maybe you also experienced some of those feelings too. Now, once I got started on this path of practicing insight meditation, I stopped doing all this experimenting and trying this and trying that. But I gotta admit, you know, that feeling of confusion and doubt and fear didn't go away forever just because I settled on a path. So even though I decided the course I wanted to take, it was still a movement into the unknown. And still, the confusion and fear that go with that still came up, still come up now in my practice. And I think it's good for us to remember that at some level, our practice is always a movement into what's not yet known. And, you know, this is really clear when we first begin with our meditation, because everything is new and everything is unfamiliar. But it's still true even if we've been practicing for a long time. And I know one of the places I feel it especially strongly is when I go on retreat and leave behind all my normal routines for something that's really radically different. And there's always these first few days when I'm like, wow, I mean, what's going to happen? Where's my mind going to go? Do I even really want to be here? And I think maybe some of you who've done retreat practice know that feeling too. But it isn't only at a time like that that we're going into something that's unknown. I mean, really, every time we sit down to meditate, we're moving into the unknown because we don't know what's going to come up in our bodies and minds. Every new day is an unknown day. You know, we don't know what might happen. And so very naturally, this movement into the unknown is a movement often into confusion and doubt and fear of what's unfamiliar and what we don't understand. And in our meditation practice, I think one of the places where we really notice this confusion especially is when we're beginning to open to some new understanding or maybe into a new phase of practice. And a few weeks ago, in one of his Monday night talks, where Tim gave his overview of the ox herding pictures, he talked about how these pictures could be divided into four different phases: this searching phase, a mastery phase, a letting go phase, and an integration phase. And I was thinking about that and realizing that, you know, one of the places where we often move back into this picture one of confusion and not knowing what we're doing is when we're kind of moving from one of these phases to another. So let's say we're in this searching and exploring phase, and then we get that glimpse of the ox or glimpse of the tracks, and we have this sense of, okay, here's the path I want to pursue. So we move from searching and experimenting to trying to learn all about our chosen path, this kind of mastery phase where the aim is to really get good at this. We want to learn the right techniques. We want to read and understand all about the teachings. We want to be a skillful meditator. But as we're doing these things, inevitably we feel a lot of doubt and confusion, you know. Maybe our meditation experience doesn't feel the way we think it should. Or something weird is happening in my screen. But anyway, we don't think our meditation feels the way it should. We don't get the results we expected. We aren't sure we're doing it right. And of course, it's really important to get it right. That's what we think. Even if our teachers reassure us that that isn't quite so important, it's fine. But we still have all these doubts. Back to picture one, we're confused. Or maybe as we start our meditation, we get to the place where we experience some strange or unexpected mental state and we feel confused and scared. And we're back to picture one again. Or we get caught up in searching for new experiences, you know, the next insight, the next marker of progress. And we keep looking for what we can't find. Except that in this case, we're not looking for worldly happiness, more sort of this spiritual experiences. But we're still, you know, looking for what isn't there. And we're back to picture one again. Now, after a while, we might get to a stage where we have a pretty good idea of how to practice. And then we find that, you know, we're still doing this struggling, trying to make our practice work the way we think it should. And then we begin to realize that all of this effort in itself is a sort of a problem. And all of our worries about how we're doing and looking for the next insight are actually getting in the way. And we see we need to stop doing that and let go. But yet, what is letting go? You know, we're not really sure what we're supposed to do or what kind of effort we're supposed to make. You know, there's this feeling, oh, well, I thought I knew what I was doing, but now I don't have a clue anymore. So back to picture one we go again. It seems like it happens so often, and I know that I've certainly had that feeling a lot myself in my practice now, where there's that sense of needing to do less and less and yet not really knowing how to do that less and less. Or it might be too that it's sort of an integration thing. We, not necessarily from the sense like in the full cycle of the pictures where we're this enlightened being coming back to normal life, but more sort of in the sense of, say, we go on a retreat and we experience feelings and mental states and insights we didn't have before. You know, it's really a place of huge learning, but then it's time to go home and we wonder, what do we do now? We want to take the experience with us. And yet when we get back and we get involved again in our daily life, it seems like it just disappears. We don't know what to do. How do we integrate what we've learned through our meditation with our daily life? We don't know. We're not even sure we can. So more doubt, more confusion. We're back to picture one again. Or then there are those times when something happens in our practice that really overwhelms us. You know, it could be that we have a really strong insight into impermanence or into not self that just really shakes us up, really scares us. You know, maybe that brings up all of our deep-seated fears of death or change, and we're like, oh, whoa, this is too much for me, you know, I'm out of here, can't handle this, you know, that's that sort of feeling of the roll up the mat phase you might have heard teachers talk about, where, you know, the student gets to the place where they're sort of really starting to get deep, and they're like, whoo, too much, I mean, it's good. But it's scary when it happens. And when that happens, once again, you know, we're back to picture one. So there's this feeling of returning over and over and over again. You know, we return to this first picture when we're caught up in wanting or aversion, but we also return when we're in a place of transition, when we're moving into unknown territory in the heart or in the mind. We return to that place of confusion, of fear and doubt. You know, and a lot of times it's not really doubt in the teaching so much, but doubt in ourselves. And I don't know about you, but this is the place that's really familiar to me. This feeling of, can I really do this? Is liberation really possible for me? You know, and when we get stuck in that kind of thinking, we really do feel stuck. But maybe we can feel a little bit less stuck if we realize that that returning to that place isn't such a bad thing, that it's natural. And fear and confusion are something we all experience when we begin to change, when we begin to see things more deeply and we start to move into a new understanding of things. So it's actually in many ways a positive thing. Not a negative. And so now to finish off this talk, I'd like to share a poem with you. And this is a poem I ran across really early in my practice. And I found it was really moving, and it expressed for me that kind of feeling of moving into this kind of strange and kind of scary and unknown, but maybe transformative path that I had started on. And I lost track of the poem then, and I couldn't find it, and I looked around and looked, and then recently I came across it again. And it came to mind when I was looking at this first Oxfording picture and thinking about this first Oxfording picture. And just to say a little bit, but not too much about it, this sharing is a little bit like, well, this may be an example of what we might encourage you to do next week. If there's something like this that you might wish to share that connects with your own experience, this Oxfording picture. And Dana is going to talk a little bit more about this during the announcements. But this is my sharing, and the poem is called The Forest by Mary Oliver, and I think it may be a part of, I think it's part of a longer poem, but this particular section is the one that I want to share. And I want to read it in three sections. And so the poem begins at first, she says, "At night under the trees, the black snake jellies forward, rubbing roughly the stems of the bloodroot, the yellow leaves, little boulders of bark to take off the old life. I don't know if he knows what is happening. I don't know if he knows it will work. In the distance, the moon and the stars give a little light. In the distance, an owl cries out." And as you read this, you can see how that snake is so much like the figure in the picture and so much like us too, in this sense that when we start on this path, it's like the old way of life is coming off and some kind of transformation is happening, but we don't really know what's happening, and we don't know if it will work. And then the poem continues on. "In the distance, the owl cries out. The snake knows these are the owl's woods. These are the woods of death. These are the woods of hardship, where you crawl and crawl, where you live in the husks of trees, where you lie on the wild twigs and they cannot bear your weight, where life has no purpose and is neither civil nor intelligent. And so in this part of the poem, we acknowledge that sense of suffering, of hardship, of fear, of this exhaustion of crawling and crawling, things not making sense, we can't see our way forward. So this really sort of speaks to that dukkha aspect of this first picture. But things don't just end there. The poem continues. Where life has no purpose and is neither civil nor intelligent, it begins to rain. It begins to smell like the bodies of flowers. At the back of the neck, the old skin splits. The snake shivers, but does not hesitate. He inches forward. He begins to bleed through like satin. And so, you know, from this place of confusion and fear and uncertainty, the transformation happens. It happens. And, you know, maybe sometimes when we least expect it. So let's just sit together for a few moments, kind of taking this in. Thank you, everybody, for your kind attention. And now we'll have some time for a small group discussion. And if this isn't a good day for you to stay and share with us, you're welcome to say goodbye. And we're happy to have you, that we have had you with us for our discussion. I'd like to encourage you, as you're sharing with each other, to share a little bit about where you see yourself in this first oxherding picture again, but this week when it comes to this sense of journeying into the unknown and the associated feelings of confusion and doubt and fear. So, you know, sharing something about how you relate to that aspect of the journey. So I will get you into your groups now, and we'll have about 15 minutes or so to discuss, and then we can come back together. Okay, I think everybody has returned. So now we have some time for you to share with the group, you know, some of the, with the larger group, anything that you discussed in your smaller groups, or if you have any comments or questions that you would like to share. And so you can just go ahead and use that little reactions button and raise your hand, and the floor is open. Or to anybody who would like to say anything, you can unmute yourself and talk as soon as I call on you. Oh, Suze, okay. Up right away.
Well, because each of us in our group all pointed to the beginner's mind, don't know mind, that it is our truth. I mean, it's where we all are, because in any moment, we don't know what's going to be coming the next. And each of us shared, you know, different kinds of difficulties that come up, and then coming back to that. And that one other piece was that this first picture isn't a problem. And if we can just say, oh, but that's just what is. It's just what is. It isn't a problem. I don't have to fix it. I just have to, like, be in it and, you know, it's like allow it. Maybe that's what letting go is allowing. I don't know. Anyway, wanted to just share that from our group.
Yeah, thank you, Suze. I think that's a really good comment too about how maybe letting go is really allowing, because even just saying letting go implies that you're really trying to make something happen, and often we can't do that. But it's so challenging. I mean, I know in my own practice, I feel like the things that are the most challenging for me are those hindrances of doubt and confusion, even more so than the wanting and aversion, because I'm kind of more familiar with the other ones and I can pick them out. And when you're confused and deluded, it's really hard. But it's, I think, in the sense that it's not a problem, it's natural, is important to remember. So thank you for your comments. Anybody else here? Oh, okay, Kathy and Cheryl. I'm not sure which of you or both of you, but whoever wants to speak, go right ahead.
We had a really good discussion in our group too. And I think, you know, I talked about vulnerability, how I, you know, I hurt my foot really bad yesterday. And, you know, and I was already in a bad place before that. Yeah. And my practice was, you know, there was definitely delusion. And, you know, as the day wears on, it's like, where did my practice go? And it comes up, and I was saying, you know, I was looking for the footprints. So I started reading Thich Nhat Hanh, and, you know, but, you know, the biggest thing for me is all that, you know, just the vulnerability of, you know, speaking with possibly people, you know, well, all of us are listening to each other, and possibly our family members are hearing us, and obviously mine is. Anyway, yeah, it's that vulnerability, and then the need for me. I mean, what happens when I have a day like I had yesterday? It's like I want to beat myself up, and it's that striving. Mm-hmm. That's the allowing. The allowing that, yeah, this is what's happening now. This is just what's happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so. I think that's so challenging, that place of trying to move from a striving mind to a allowing mind.
Yeah, a striving mind and an aversive mind and, you know, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good. It's all necessary.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And let's see, Jerry.
Yeah, our group brought up similar issues, certainly the beginner mind and that striving and the issues that arise and the problems that arise with striving. And also we're talking about the images themselves and not a problem. Here we are and looking at what the person is walking through nature, and they see all these guideposts in nature, you know, the stream and hearing the sound of the locust, and in search of something else, and in search of something else missing, mm-hmm. you know, the what was happening right then and there. So just recognizing just this now, that beginner's mind, you know, and honoring. The sound of the locust, nature. I mean, what could be better?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that makes me appreciate these pictures even more, because there's so much nature in them, and it, just seeing them is a reminder to connect that way. So thank you, Jerry. And Jean just popped up.
It would help if I unmute.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the talk this morning. I think it's important for me to remember that confusion, doubt, and fear, they have always been my companions, and they will continue to be my companions. I just need to get comfortable with that process and maybe recognize them, but not give them the power that they've had in the past. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed, well, Mary Oliver's Top Drawer. and I really liked the imagery of a snake. It's not my favorite sort of animal. You know, it's not like my cat who sits on my lap and is warm and fuzzy and purrs. But I could see the powerful image there of shedding the old and moving out with the new. It very dramatic. So thank you for the talk this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, that poem. I remember coming across it years ago. I mean, before Sims even had started. Mm. And it just felt so much the way I felt in my own confusion. So it was nice to be able to share it. Mary Oliver is indeed Top Drawer. I agree. Thank you.
She is.
And Lauren. Maybe this should be our final one because I want to make sure Dane has a little time.
Yeah. Really quickly, I liked the link between the transition, that transitioning from a phase that maybe is more known and more mastered, then the confusion and doubt come up. So actually it's inevitable that if we're going to grow, we will be in doubt and confusion, and that discomfort we were talking about in our group is really important, difficult, but really important to stay with. So thank you so much, Linda.
Yeah, thank you, Lauren, too. I know it's a hard, I feel like it's, for me too, it's a hard learning to remember that those times of discomfort are times of growth. It doesn't always feel like it, but they are. So thank you all for your comments and your sharing. And I'll turn it over to Dane for our announcements and closing.
All right. Thanks, Lindell.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So on Donna, Sims and his teachers freely offer the teachings of the Buddha to all, regardless of ability to pay. We appreciate your generosity, Donna, today, and many thanks for the Donna you have already offered to support Sims and our teachers' livelihood. Donna to teachers and Sims can be made by going to the donation tab on the homepage of the Sims website, seattleinsight.org. Announcements. For next class, like Lindell mentioned, she brought a poem. You have an opportunity to bring something that relates to this first picture for you. Maybe it evokes similar thoughts or emotions, or maybe it just feels right. And it can be pretty much anything at all. It could be a story. It could be a song. It could be a memory. It could be a picture. It could be written by you. It could not be written by you. Anything at all that makes sense to you. And you'll have the opportunity to share these in small groups and then coming back to the bigger group if you want to. As well as you're not required to bring anything if you're not feeling up to it or you forget. But we do encourage it because we think it might be fun for everybody to bring a little artistic expression. And I know I always really appreciate hearing the different poems people bring up or the different things everyone mentions. It's nice to see how different everyone can think about things. And then we'll do a little metta to close us out. If you want to take the meditative posture. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings have love arising. May all beings be free. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Feel free to unmute and say goodbye.